also be ridiculing the person who is on social media doing the exact same thing? Yet we don't do that. We treat the offended person on social media's perspective as more valid than the person who would be standing on the street outside the comedy club. If anything, the reverse should be true. We should value the person who is willing to spend their actual time protesting something over the person who is retweeting from their couch in their underwear, probably from an anonymous account, and potentially from 10 or more anonymous accounts to artificially magnify their voice. The fact that we give critics of comedy this much attention online has threatened to kill live comedy. The comedy stage is a comedian's live laboratory, and sometimes jokes, like experiments if you're a scientist, can go awry. A joke isn't born perfect, yet some comedians have seen their careers come crashing down based on what they've said trying to rehearse an incomplete joke. We've so allowed social media to threaten the ability to tell jokes that many top comedians now require that audiences have their phones collected before the show starts. Let me share another example with you of another company falling victim to what I call hyper-responsiveness, and then I'm going to tell you about more of the fallout surrounding my CNN statement that I loved the First Amendment and boobs. You'll recall that in late February of 2018, there was a shooting outside a high school in South Florida. 17 people were killed, and social media was in an uproar. The uproar spread so quickly that many companies felt compelled to get involved, even those that had nothing at all to do with the shooting or gun control. One example of that, Delta Airlines. Delta gave a travel discount to members of the NRA who fly on its airplanes. The most recent discount had been used by 13 people to travel to the NRA's annual meeting in Texas. Let's presume that discount, which couldn't have amounted to much, led to Delta taking $200 off the listed airfare for each of these customers. That's probably too high, but let's presume it cost Delta a grand total of $2,600 off the normal rate. In the wake of the school shooting, Delta probably fielded a couple of media inquiries about the NRA discount, and it's likely that far left-wingers on social media and the blogosphere circuit started to speak out about the airline discount and ask why it existed. Fearful of the stories that might emerge and the existing social media blowback in the wake of the school shooting, Delta panicked and said it would no longer provide any discount to NRA members. The backlash to Delta's decision was immediate and substantial. Republican politicians in Georgia, Delta's home state, removed a tax subsidy that would have saved the airline $50 million. $50 million! All because Delta felt compelled to weigh in on a contentious political issue. If I were a Delta shareholder, I'd be furious. All Delta had to do was say it provided discounts for individuals from a variety of organizations across the political spectrum. If it wanted to end those discounts for political organizations, it could have easily removed all of them once the shooting story died down. Or in what would have probably been better business, it could have just left things as they were and not changed anything and maintained that it was being content neutral in offering discounts to major political organizations from all walks of American life. Instead, it tried to avoid bad news and social media discord and cost itself $50 million. And what did Delta gain from the decision? Nothing. There isn't a single person in America who was going to change their travel plans because Delta gave an NRA discount to members who flew the airline. And there isn't a single person who wasn't flying Delta that is now going to start flying Delta because they ended the NRA discount. Not one. I honestly believe that. Moreover, if you're losing business because some people are changing their airlines over your NRA discounts, are those customers who are going to never fly your airline in the future? Even if there are a tiny, tiny subset of people adjusting their behavior, are they really going to adjust their behavior forever? Remember that United Airlines saw zero impact on its earnings after it dragged the Asian doctor off the plane, which was probably the worst viral publicity any airline company has dealt with in the social media era. I don't believe there is a single person in the country who would choose not to fly Delta or to fly Delta over this issue. This story is completely manufactured outrage with no actual impact. That's especially the case if Delta offers the cheapest and most convenient route to where you want to travel. In other words, that's especially the case if Delta does its job. If you fly nonstop to where I'm taking my family and you offer a cheaper fare, I don't care what political organizations you provide a discount to. I'm taking your airline. Hell, I wouldn't even care if the CEO of Delta had come out and said, I hate Clay Travis and hope his business fails. I'd still fly Delta if they were cheaper and more direct, even if the company hated me. Further, who in their right mind cares what Delta's corporate stance is on the Second Amendment? And more important, who in their right mind is advising these CEOs that they should worry about what customers think about the company's position on the Second Amendment? Remember how I told you PR people were idiots? Here's what I wish Delta's CEO cared about. Ensuring that Delta had the best goddamn Wi-Fi of any airline on the planet. Instead of worrying about gun rights, how about you make it so the Wi-Fi actually works on your airplanes? Make it so I can write an article on OutKick and know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I can publish that article while I'm flying across the country. Because right now, not one airline in America's Wi-Fi is good enough for me to be confident I can pull this off. My point is, focus on what your business does and leave politics by the wayside. Sane American consumers do not care what corporations think about contentious political issues. We just don't. We care about whether you deliver the best possible value to us as consumers. I feel like companies everywhere are falling victim to social media activists and media inquiries about non-stories and overvaluing what those people are saying online. I get it. It can be terrifying if you get 100 people all making threats to you in the same day on social media. But guess what? That happens to me every single day. It doesn't matter what opinion I've shared. I guarantee I have been told thousands and thousands and thousands of times that insert person here will never read, watch, or listen to what I say because of insert opinion here. Guess what happens? Those people don't stop reading, watching, or listening to OutKick. In fact, many of them are listening to this book right now. They just paid for the book, making me even richer. Hi! What's more, those 100 people might actually be 10 people with 10 different accounts, each trying to manufacture outrage to make you believe it's more substantial than it is. Much of social media is completely fake. The truth of the matter is this: as long as you do a good job at your core business, your audience is never going to leave over things that don't involve your core business. Chick-fil-A is a great example. Do you know how many people changed their behavior at Chick-fil-A over the company's public and evangelical religious stance when it came to gay marriage? Zero. Do you know why? Because Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwich is so good. You can also argue Chick-fil-A had no business getting involved in politics either, but when you aren't open on Sundays, you're kind of branding yourself as a religious company. Are people really going to be surprised when a religious company has religious political opinions relating to marriage? If anything, this helped Chick-fil-A's overall brand because it served as evidence that they practiced what they preached. Plus, there are thousands of gay people every single day who eat at Chick-fil-A. Do you know why? Because they love a good chicken sandwich too. When they began opening locations in New York City, there was widespread media freakout and confident predictions from writers that they would fail. Surely no one in woke Manhattan would eat there. As I write this, the line is so long every day at the downtown locations, they have a rope line and a bouncer letting diners in a few at a time. Turns out even people in the wokest parts of our country are just like me with the airline. If the product is good, even if the politics aren't the same as yours, you'll still consume the product. My advice for every company in America is this: find out what you do and do it better tomorrow than you were doing it today. Then repeat that every day for as long as you can. That's how you go from good to great. If something in America isn't connected to your goal of making your company better at what it does, don't worry one iota about it and ignore all suggestions that you should care about it. My own story of social media outrage ended up being a perfect mirror of our modern era because it exposed an important lesson. You can't respond to social media without angering as many people as you please. I know this from my own experience. Back in the fall of 2016, Jack Daniel's, the Tennessee-based whiskey, offered to pay me $3,000 to show up in an event in downtown Nashville and sent out a tweet from that event. Because I like money and alcohol, I agreed to attend. But then I got a panicked email from Jack Daniel's. Why? Because I'd said something controversial. What had I said? that I disagreed with the decision of Vanderbilt University, one of my alma maters, to pay millions of dollars to sandblast the word Confederate off a building named Confederate Memorial Hall on their campus. I could probably write an entire book on the absurdity of our modern-day political correct mores being applied to history, but suffice it to say that as a longtime student of history, I find decisions like the one Vanderbilt made to be absurd. I wrote that on OutKick, and then I got this email from Jack Daniels. Hey, Clay. I'm reaching out to let you know that our client has deemed the attached two tweets from earlier today to be a breach of your agreement with them and thus has chosen to terminate said agreement. Just so we are fully transparent, the section of the contract that you breached was Section 6A, Part 5, which states, "The influencer will not commit any act which brings Jack Daniels into public disrepute, contempt, scandal, or ridicule, or which insults or offends the general community to which Jack Daniels' advertising and publicity materials are directed, or which might tend to injure the success of Jack Daniels or any of Jack Daniels' products or services, including, without limitation, disparaging Jack Daniels, its products or services, or its competitors." Our client believes that these are two acts that brings them into public disrepute and which offends the general community to which Jack Daniels' advertising and publicity materials are directed, so they have asked that you, all caps, please do not attend Thursday's event. This was actually bolded in their email to me, seriously. You can expect to receive a letter from our legal team saying something similar. Please do not take this action personally. We had no choice but to do this, as the client believes that you went too far with these tweets. What was my offensive tweet? I tweeted this twice with a link to my OutKick article. Vanderbilt is paying $1.2 million to sandblast the word Confederate off a building. Unbelievable. That was offensive? Of all the things I've said and written over the years, Jack Daniels believes this tweet brings them, quote, into public disrepute and, quote, offends the general community? Now, leaving aside the fact that the only reason Jack Daniel didn't fight for the Confederacy was because he was too young to fight in the Civil War, all his brothers fought for the South, does Jack Daniels have no idea who drinks their whiskey? Which side do you think the average whiskey drinker is likely to be on? Mine or the left-wingers erasing history? I did what I do when idiocy like this happens. I published the Jack Daniels emails on my website and told them they could go to hell. The PR people looked like idiots. Remember, PR people are mostly idiots. They created a story where there was no story to begin with. What's more, they confirmed a fallacy that far too many companies have come to believe. The illusion that placating social media outrage works. The truth, honestly, is you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. My advice is to stand your ground and wait for the next viral outrage story to emerge. Unfortunately, most in sports aren't taking that advice. They're picking the left-wing answer, favoring one side of the political equation over the other. That's what we saw in the biggest test of free speech in sports media, the disparate treatment of conservative political speech and liberal political speech at ESPN. Let's talk about the case of Curt Schilling and Jemele Hill. Chapter 5. Curt Schilling versus Jemele Hill. In the space of 1 year, ESPN had two employees give strong political opinions on social media. One of those people was Curt Schilling, a white man who had played pro baseball, attaining a great measure of fame thanks to his bloody sock in the Boston Red Sox run to their first ever World Series championship. By 2016, Schilling had become one of the network's most prominent on-air baseball analysts. The other person was Jemele Hill, a black woman who had been at ESPN for several years but attained growing prominence in 2015 when she received her own television show on ESPN2. Many ESPN employees in private conversations with me came back again and again to the difference in how these two employees were treated. This was the moment to them that crystallized ESPN's embrace of far left-wing politics and repudiation of any conservative political thought. What happened? Let's start with the case of Curt Schilling. In the spring of 2016, Schilling went on his private Facebook page and shared a meme that had gone viral online. It showed an old man dressed in women's lingerie wearing a wig and bright red lipstick. and the picture alongside the man said, "Let him in to the restroom with your daughter, or else you're a narrow-minded, judgmental, unloving, racist bigot who needs to die." The meme was connected to the ongoing debate in North Carolina over whether the state could restrict public bathrooms to the sex on an individual's birth certificate. Schilling agreed with the North Carolina legislature's new law, which was passed with Republican support, to combat a local ordinance that had been passed by Democrats in Charlotte to permit anyone to use any bathroom they felt comfortable utilizing. A screenshot of Schilling's private Facebook post was taken to Twitter, where it was shared and immediately went viral. The usual far left-wing sports media suspects expressed outrage that Schilling could share this opinion and still be employed by ESPN. That night, ESPN fired Kurt Schilling, issuing this statement: "ESPN is an inclusive company. Kurt Schilling has been advised that his conduct was unacceptable and his employment with ESPN has been terminated." Schilling had previously been suspended for sharing another conservative meme, one that equated the number of Nazis with the number of Muslim extremists. ESPN's firing of Schilling for his private Facebook post set a scary and censorious precedent for ESPN because the line they had drawn was expansive. The network was saying there were private political opinions its employees could not share and remain employed there. "At the time, I disagreed with Schilling on the North Carolina bathroom debate. I think people should do what they've been doing for 60 years, use whichever bathroom they want without getting politics involved. However, I also don't have a problem with him sharing this meme on his own Facebook page outside of work hours. As a First Amendment absolutist, I believe in more speech over less speech. That's because the heart of free speech is the marketplace of ideas it fosters, where everyone should feel comfortable sharing his or her own political opinions. When the First Amendment's marketplace of ideas flourishes, that allows our nation to debate and decide who has the best solutions. This is the only way a liberal, inclusive democracy can succeed. We've lost that if we are all afraid to share our private political opinions outside of work for fear we will lose our jobs. The best way to put an end to bad ideas isn't to attack the people who have those ideas. It's to attack the facts they use to support those ideas." It's important to note that a substantial portion of Americans would also agree with Kurt Schilling's position here. Many also might not agree, but also would understand that he merely shared a popular meme on Facebook. Schilling may have simply found the meme funny. Just because you share something on Facebook doesn't mean you agree with it completely. Just like many of you, I share things on social media that I agree or disagree with all the time. Regardless, believing that transgender people should use the restroom on their birth certificate isn't a fringe political belief. There are tens of millions of people who would hold that exact same belief, including the majority of the North Carolina legislature. Many of the people who share the same opinion as Schilling also watch ESPN regularly because they like sports too. Moreover, whether you agreed with Schilling or not, it's important to note that he shared this statement on his private Facebook page outside of work hours. It's not as if he shared his comments on transgender bathroom issues in the middle of Baseball Tonight on ESPN's airwaves. ESPN, in the spring of an election year when political discussions are at their apex, had made a direct ruling on private political speech by an employee. You could be fired for a political opinion the network didn't approve of, even if, and I believe this is very significant, you were sharing that opinion on your own time, on your own social media account. ESPN punished Schilling not because he shared his political opinions in his private time, but because he shared a political opinion that ESPN disagreed with. This is a significant point. ESPN didn't object to Schilling's sharing of a political opinion. They objected to Schilling's sharing of a political opinion the company's leaders disagreed with. In other words, if Schilling had endorsed the rights of transgender people to use the bathroom of their choice, he'd still be employed at ESPN. ESPN's decision wasn't content neutral. They specifically fired him not because he commented on a political issue in his private time, but because they disagreed with his conservative beliefs on transgender bathroom issues. That has a chilling effect on ESPN's employees because the message you have sent to conservative employees is straightforward. You have the right to share your political opinions in your private life, so long as they are the same as ours. What's more, as I said before, ESPN's decision wasn't content neutral. The network regularly allows left-wing political opinions to be shared on its airwaves. That is, far from applying the same standards to all employees, ESPN has regularly allowed left-wing political opinions on air. Shortly before Schilling's firing, an ESPN employee used network airwaves to make a liberal political statement. Bomani Jones, a far left-wing social justice warrior who recently received his own television show on the network, wore a Cleveland Caucasian shirt on Mike and Mike, a morning radio show simulcast on ESPN2. It was an awkward stunt designed to draw attention to his belief that the Cleveland Indians nickname and logo was racist. Now that's a liberal proposition, not endorsed by most fans, that the Cleveland Indians should be forced to change the name of their mascot. And Jones's outfit had nothing to do with any sports argument he was making that day. It's a direct work act that's being distributed by ESPN. That is, Jones's far-left politics, liberal and fringe in nature, were okay to be distributed by ESPN on their airwaves without censure, but Schilling's non-work conservative Facebook post was deemed unacceptable to the company. This has happened over and over again. In 2018, ESPN's Max Kellerman said on air that the Notre Dame Fighting Irish mascot needed to be changed because the Fighting Irish moniker was offensive to some Irish people. Really? He said this live on ESPN. I'm quoting from Max Kellerman now. How hard is it for you or anyone to empathize, simply empathize, with a group who is offended, even if it is a minority of the group that is offended? Many Irish Americans are not offended, but many are. And should that, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish moniker and the leprechaun mascot, also change? The answer is yes. Unequivocally, yes. Pernicious negative stereotypes of marginalized people that offend even some among them should be changed. It's not that hard. Leaving aside the absurd logic here, how can you reconcile this disparate treatment? Two ESPN employees advocate extremely fringe liberal positions on the air with no sports connection to either while they are working, and the other employee advocates a mainstream conservative opinion on his personal social media page while not working. If you are going to treat everyone equally, aren't Kellerman and Bomani Jones's political positions more of an issue for ESPN? It's a stretch to argue these are sports opinions from either Jones or Kellerman, but the network's bias was truly exposed when they allowed Rachel Nichols, who hosts her own show on ESPN, to deliver a full-throated endorsement of the NBA's decision to pull its All-Star game from Charlotte over the North Carolina transgender bathroom law. That is, ESPN allowed Nichols to endorse the opposite political perspective of Schilling on ESPN's airwaves, but wouldn't allow Schilling to share a different opinion on his private Facebook page. This is outrageous. It's clear that ESPN is making decisions not based on political speech itself, but based on whether it agrees with the content of that political speech. You can advocate for far left-wing opinions on the network's airwaves, but you can't advocate for conservative political beliefs in your own private time on your own private social media pages. That's the very definition of unequal treatment. If, say, ESPN had a policy that all employees were to refrain from discussing political issues in any public arena, then Schilling could be fired for his political statements. But ESPN doesn't have that policy. Read again ESPN's statement when they fired Schilling. I want you to note the scary irony here. ESPN is an inclusive company. Kurt Schilling has been advised that his conduct was unacceptable and his employment with ESPN has been terminated. Isn't ESPN essentially advocating a political position here? It's taking the opposite perspective of Kurt Schilling. It's not just that ESPN has a different standard for conservative and liberal opinions. It's that ESPN itself is espousing far left political opinions. If the corporation can have a political opinion, isn't it hard to argue That individual employees can't have their own opinions outside of the time they appear on ESPN's airwaves? Essentially, what ESPN is saying is that it's fine if you have a political opinion, but it better be the same as ours. That's what totalitarian governments do. Read as such, how scary is this statement? What ESPN is really saying is, we're an inclusive company unless you disagree with us, in which case we're exclusive and you're fired. How amazing is it in this age of diversity that companies only want diversity of color, not diversity of opinion? Wouldn't it arguably strengthen Disney and ESPN to have people working for it that advance every opinion under the sun, liberal and conservative, so that they can better reflect the country as a whole? There have been thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of Disney and ESPN employees who agree with Schilling's opinion. Some of them may have even shared the same meme. How nervous are they? What they've been told is pretty clear. You're welcome to have opinions, but they better be the same as ours. Hello, George Orwell's 1984. Welcome to the People's Republic of ESPN. The firing of Curt Schilling terrified conservative ESPN employees and effectively put them on notice. Don't share your conservative opinions in any public manner, even away from work. This opinion that ESPN had chosen sides in the culture war and picked far left-wing politics was echoed by an ombudsman covering the network who wrote in December of 2016 on ESPN's own website what many ESPN employees were telling me privately. I'm quoting from this article now. As it turns out, ESPN is far from immune from the political fever that has afflicted so much of the country over the past year. Internally, there's a feeling among many staffers, both liberal and conservative, that the company's perceived move leftward has had a stifling effect on discourse inside the company and has affected its public-facing products. Consumers have sensed that same leftward movement, alienating some. For most of its history, ESPN was viewed relatively apolitically. Its core focus was, and remains today, of course, sports. Although the nature of sports meant an occasional detour into politics and culture was inevitable, there wasn't much chatter about an overall perceived political bias. If there was any tension internally, it didn't manifest itself publicly. That has changed in the past few years, and ESPN staffers cite several factors. One is the rise of social media, which has led to more direct political commentary by ESPN employees, even if not delivered via the network's broadcast or digital pipes. Another is ESPN's increase in debate-themed shows, which encourage strong opinions that are increasingly focusing on the overlap between sports and politics. Many ESPN employees I talked to, including liberals and conservatives, most of whom preferred to speak on background, worry that the company's politics have become a little too obvious, empowering those who feel as if they're in line with the company's position and driving underground those who don't. If you're a Republican or conservative, you feel the need to talk in whispers, one conservative ESPN employee said. There's even a fear of putting Fox News on a TV in the office. But Jemele Hill, co-host of ESPN2's His and Hers, isn't buying that. I would challenge those people who say they feel suppressed, she said. Do you fear backlash or do you fear right and wrong? That article was published 8 months after Curt Schilling was fired and 1 month after the election of Donald Trump. I want you to read Jemele Hill's quote again. I would challenge those people who say they feel suppressed. Do you fear backlash or do you fear right and wrong? Wow. Those who see issues in only right and wrong and simplify everything into black and white categories are typically not deep thinkers or supporters of a robust First Amendment. Hill was straightforward. She believed her far left-wing political views were right, and everyone with different opinions was wrong. Far from being chastised for her public endorsement of far left-wing politics at the company and on social media, within 2 months, Hill was promoted. The new host of one of ESPN's most prominent network shows, the 6 p.m. Eastern Sports Center, which was immediately rechristened SC6. Hill, along with her co-host Michael Smith, was trumpeted in ESPN's announcement about SC6. With a format geared to fit Smith and Hill's personalities, along with a specially designed set and its own music, the 6 will be different from any other SportsCenter produced since ESPN's first telecast of its signature news and information program in 1979. Debuting on the day after the Super Bowl, the premiere episode of the weekday offering will be hailed with an hour-long simulcast on ESPN, ESPN2, and ESPN News. Smith and Hill, who previously co-hosted ESPN2's His and Hers, and will be the first African-American duo to host SportsCenter on a regular basis, will combine some of the best elements of their previous program with SportsCenter for the new show, including a deliberate and well-paced conversational format in which they discuss sports topics, news, culture, and social issues. The program will continue SportsCenter's focus on news of the day and breaking news as warranted. I'm most excited for the viewers to see how much freedom we are going to have, said Smith, who's been with ESPN since 2004. The show, which debuted on February 6, 2017, would last just 13 months before both co-hosts were forced out amid publicly collapsing ratings and a near universal revolt among viewers against what I dubbed Woke Center, a consistent intermixing of sports and left-wing politics to the exclusion of actual sports news. While the show was canceled for low ratings, and as soon as Hill and Smith were replaced, ratings surged once more, the biggest flashpoint didn't come on the air. It came off the air in September of 2017 when Jemele Hill took to her Twitter account to share her own far left-wing political opinions. On September 11, 2017, just as halftime neared for an opening night Monday Night Football doubleheader airing on ESPN to kick off the NFL season, Hill tweeted an attack on the President of the United States. Hill, whose Twitter profile picture showed her standing between Barack and Michelle Obama at the White House, tweeted that Donald Trump was a white supremacist who had surrounded himself with other white supremacists in his cabinet. She also tweeted that many of his supporters were white supremacists too. Multiple followers on Twitter tagged her tweets and sent them to me. As I scrolled through the comments she'd made, I found it to be a crucible moment in the intersection of sports and politics. Hill's tweets about Trump had nothing at all to do with sports. There was zero connection between her opinion on Trump and her job at ESPN. This was a prominent ESPN employee deciding to attack Trump, his staff, and his supporters for being racist. What's more, she offered zero defense for her position, simply stating it to be true. She didn't believe she was doing anything wrong. She didn't just believe she was right and everyone who disagreed with her was wrong. She believed Trump and his supporters were white supremacists, including, evidently, the millions of Trump supporters who had previously voted for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. In my mind, there was zero difference between what Hill had done and what Kurt Schilling had done. She'd taken a far left-wing opinion that wasn't connected to sports and shared it on her Twitter account, just like Schilling had taken a conservative political opinion and shared it on his Facebook account. Hill didn't feel the same standard that applied to Kurt Schilling should apply to her. She was fine with sharing political opinions that negative about Donald Trump because she believed the company agreed with her. For the past year, it had been clear. ESPN's employees didn't like Donald Trump, and they were attacking him as they'd never attacked any president before, with some of the most virulent and personal attacks possible in today's media. Now Hill had taken it to the next level, branding a white man, the leader of the country, a white supremacist. This was what had been brewing for a long time. It was why ESPN's employees donated 270 times as much money to Hillary Clinton as they donated to Donald Trump. I sat looking at the tweets for several minutes. I considered Hill a talented opinionist whom I'd previously had on my radio shows. I'd even tried to convince her to team up with me and do a morning radio show a couple of years ago. Anyone else, I would have instantly retweeted the comments. But I liked Hill. As a firm believer in the First Amendment's marketplace of ideas, I didn't even believe that her opinion should be silenced. Still, I couldn't escape the Schilling precedent ESPN had set. What would have happened if Schilling, or any other ESPN employee, had tweeted Barack Obama was a black supremacist and so were his supporters in cabinet? He or she would have been fired on the spot. I knew what Hill was thinking, though, as she told ESPN. She believed she was right and everyone else was wrong. I couldn't escape one thought. Why should Curt Schilling have been fired for his political opinions and Hill rewarded and promoted for hers? Schilling's sharing of the Facebook meme was done on his own private time and from his own private Facebook account, yet it was deemed unacceptable. Not because it was political, but because it was a conservative political commentary ESPN disagreed with. If ESPN followed its own precedent, set with Curt Schilling, then Jemele Hill would be fired. I didn't want Jemele Hill to be fired because I considered her to be a friend. Although in the wake of my sharing these tweets, she unfollowed me and even blocked me on Twitter, which kept me from seeing her tweets from my account. Sadly, this is exactly what I've come to expect from many left-wing sports media figures. They don't want to engage in a debate. They believe they are right, and anyone who disagrees with them is wrong, and evil, and racist, and sexist too. I already knew she wouldn't be fired for her comments about Donald Trump, even though it clearly violated ESPN's social media policy and was every bit as inflammatory to conservatives as Schilling's comments about transgender bathroom issues had been to liberals. Why would ESPN treat the employees differently? Because ESPN agreed with Hill's comments about Donald Trump and disagreed with Schilling's comments about transgender bathroom issues. At ESPN, you were free to have your own political opinions, so long as they were the exact same as the company's. I retweeted Jemele Hill's comments about the president being a white supremacist. The media explosion was instantaneous, one of the biggest sports stories of the year, and it had absolutely nothing to do with sports. Now ESPN had a decision to make. Would it treat liberal speech the same way it had treated conservative speech with Curt Schilling? Or would it give Jemele Hill a pass because the company agreed with her that the president was a white supremacist? You can probably figure out exactly how this went. ESPN's statement established its left-wing political bias, clear as day. Jemele has a right to her personal opinions, but not to publicly share them on a platform that implies that she was in any way speaking on behalf of ESPN. She has acknowledged that her tweets crossed that line and has apologized for doing so. We accept her apology. Curt Schilling was fired for his conservative political opinions, and Jemele Hill faced no consequences at all for her liberal political opinions. That's despite the fact that Hill's assertion that Trump, his cabinet, and his supporters were white supremacists is likely supported by a smaller contingent of the American public than Schilling's belief that you should use the bathroom of the sex you were born. In other words, Hill's political opinion was more controversial than Schilling's was and was supported by fewer sports fans nationwide. Yet having established that she would face no consequences for her political speech, Hill continued to repeat her belief that Trump was a white supremacist far and wide on TV, on social media, on radio, and on podcasts. She knew that ESPN wouldn't treat her the same way they treated Schilling, because she knew ESPN agreed with her far left-wing liberal criticisms of Trump. This should be utterly terrifying to everyone reading this book because of the standard that ESPN has now established when it comes to political speech. You only have freedom of speech if you have the same political opinions as your employer. What's more, Bob Iger, Disney's CEO, who was then planning on running for president as a Democrat, acknowledged that he personally made the decision not to penalize Hill. This means Iger, who was incentivized to attack the president if he wanted to run for president, was using his company to make political statements. If he decided to run for president, then the Hill decision would put him in good stead with black voters in the primaries across the country. Here, they would see, was a white man who stood up for a black woman's ability to savagely attack Donald Trump and face no consequences at her job. How did Iger explain his decision? I felt that we needed to take context into account, he said. Context included what was going on in America. What I felt, what we felt, was that there were a lot of people who were outraged, particularly black people. They felt that the promise that was given to them, liberty and justice for all, during the Civil War or civil rights movement, were theirs. What they've seen in the last couple of months is the opposite. It's not only disappointing, it's angered them. I've never experienced prejudice, certainly not racism. It's hard for me to understand what it feels like to experience racism. We need to take into account what Jamel and ESPN were feeling during this time. Look at his final line. What Jamel and ESPN were feeling. He's admitting that Jamel's opinion is the same as the company's. How can you read these quotes and not see them as transparently political and favoring one side over another? Bob Iger would decide in 2018 not to run for president due to his announced purchase of many 21st Century Fox assets. He told Vogue magazine that he had, in fact, been preparing for a run for president prior to that announced merger. I offered Iger an opportunity to comment on his Jamel Hill decision and other political issues at ESPN for this book, but he declined. The only public comment Disney's CEO has made about me was favoring a tweet about an article criticizing me in September 2017. That was a bit odd because Iger rarely favorites anything on Twitter. Regardless, being the CEO of a prominent company like Disney and setting different standards for political speech based on whether that speech is conservative or liberal has a chilling impact on our national discourse. It's true that Kurt Schilling wasn't fired by a governmental entity for his Facebook post, and so the First Amendment isn't directly implicated. The First Amendment applies to governmental regulation of speech, not private consequences of that speech. However, that misses the larger issues at play. Isn't Disney as powerful as many of the states in this country? Put it this way. If power was your goal, would you rather be governor of Wyoming or CEO of Disney? Does anyone pick Wyoming governor? Just about everyone has to work for a corporation these days. If corporations start policing social media comments made outside of office hours and firing employees for political opinions the corporations disagree with, shouldn't that be scary to everyone regardless of their political persuasions? Doesn't that ultimately detract from the First Amendment's marketplace of ideas? If, as I certainly think is the case, many ESPN employees are terrified to share their political opinions on their social media accounts for fear of losing their jobs, how is that making the debate in this country robust and uninhibited? Very few of us are so rich and so wealthy that we can live without being employed somewhere. Why should only the extremely wealthy have full freedom of speech today? Especially when many large corporations are more powerful than state governments. These corporations have more power today to constrict speech than many governments do. That's one of many reasons why it's absurd that a company's employees and a company have to agree on everything. Sure, Disney is a liberal corporation under Bob Iger's leadership, and you may well agree with his inconsistent decisions in the cases of Schilling and Hill. However, what if someone works at Hobby Lobby, a conservative corporation, and posts a strong belief on the right to abortion or birth control on social media? Should Hobby Lobby be able to fire them for that opinion because their opinion differs with Hobby Lobby's? I don't think so. Corporations and employees shouldn't have to be allied on the same side of political opinion. Employees shouldn't fear for their jobs if they share opinions online in their private time. Corporations, as we saw with Schilling, have a great deal of power to enforce agreement when it comes to political speech. That's not okay, and it's not right. Regardless of your political persuasion, you should find it alarming that Kurt Schilling and Jamel Hill weren't treated the same by Bob Iger and Disney. Disney's unequal treatment of political speech would continue over Memorial Day weekend in 2018 when the company announced the hiring of Keith Olbermann to work at ESPN. The same Keith Olbermann who hosted a far left-wing talk show on MSNBC and had published a book entitled Trump is Fucking Crazy. Just in case you thought Olbermann was joking and utilizing hyperbole to sell books, he appended the helpful parenthetical, "This is not a joke," and spent much of the past 2 years regularly tweeting that the president was a Nazi, white supremacist, racist, who needed to be impeached. So in case you were keeping score, calling the president a Nazi acceptable, saying you think people should use the bathrooms on their birth certificates, unacceptable. Much to the chagrin of many of my far left-wing haters in the sports media who only support free speech when they agree with it, I'm all in on the marketplace of ideas, a First Amendment absolutist. I believe that you should be able to share any opinion in any way that you see fit. It's the only way to figure out which ideas are the best for our country. I also believe that you shouldn't have to worry about losing your job because of your political opinion that is privately expressed outside of work hours. The far left-wing sports media has gone so insane of late that many of them argued that Kevin McHale shouldn't be able to work at TNT or coach in the NBA again because he attended a Donald Trump rally in Minnesota. Seriously, he wasn't even on stage. He was just picked out in a crowd photo. It's only when everyone feels entirely comfortable sharing their opinions that we allow the marketplace to decide which ideas win. Right now, we don't have that. We have an artificially circumscribed level of discourse, and I believe that's why there is so much anger in this country today. Many people don't feel they have the freedom to say what they believe and remain employed. Whether you agree with Schilling's opinion or not, what we're moving toward is an era when robust debate is silenced, and the marketplace of ideas isn't an actual thriving marketplace. That matters because sometimes fringe opinions on the left or right eventually become mainstream ideas. We need to allow all opinions to live freely and employees to share them freely without fear of termination at their jobs. We need to end the era of acceptable and unacceptable opinions in this country. There's a huge difference between saying, "I disagree with you and here's why," and "I disagree with you and you should never be able to utter that opinion in public again and remain employed." Furthermore, let's return anew to the standard being set by Disney, ESPN, and their CEO, Bob Iger. Where is Kurt Schilling free to share his opinion on transgender bathroom issues? If he can't do it on his private social media accounts because he's employed by Disney, he's silenced there. Can he do it at dinner with his friends and family? What if a waiter secretly records that conversation and posts it online? Disney would be under the same pressure to act as now. When and where can Schilling share his opinion and keep his job with ESPN? Given the rapid collapse between public and private life in this country, the answer may well be nowhere. For those of you who say, "Well, he's free to share his opinion but not be employed by Disney," why should your personal political beliefs dictate where you can work? I just fundamentally reject this idea that we should all choose which companies we work for based on the company's leaders having the same political beliefs that we do. Liberal, conservative, libertarian, totally uninterested in politics, I think everyone should be treated the exact same so long as their behavior is legal. I think companies are stronger for employing people with all different sorts of opinions. The company isn't speaking when employees give their opinions online. Individual people are. Surely we're all smart enough to see this, right? Ultimately, I decided to share Jemele Hill's tweets, even at the expense of our friendship, and my ability to even see her tweets any longer, because I believe ESPN's policy is unfair, flat out wrong, and setting the wrong precedent for political speech in all of sports media. What Disney and Bob Iger decide, most companies will follow. I believe all speech, conservative or liberal, should be treated the same. Either ESPN should make a pronouncement that no employees can share public political opinions, a stance I would disagree with, or they should say that on their private Facebook and Twitter pages, their employees are free to espouse the political causes they agree with, regardless of whether the company agrees with it or not. As is, we've reached an untenable place with misplaced incentives. In punishing Schilling for conservative politics and allowing Hill to have free rein when it comes to liberal politics, the message ESPN has sent to social media users is unfortunate. Let's police political thought for acceptability. And is that really behavior ESPN, Disney, or any company wants to encourage? Because I can't get away from the environment ESPN has encouraged. Some losers out there were hitting refresh on Kurt Schilling's personal Facebook page all day long, just waiting for him to express a conservative political opinion they disagreed with, just so they could try and get a guy fired for having a political opinion they disagreed with. Have we really reached an era when we care so much what former athletes think about transgender bathroom issues that we insist that multi-billion dollar corporations take action against them if they have a different opinion than we do? More important, does it really advance the cause of transgender advocates to demand Kurt Schilling be fired for his opinion? I would argue the exact opposite. This makes Schilling a martyr for many people who agree with him and makes sympathetic people in the middle of an issue recoil. I think this polarizes a debate that shouldn't be polarizing. Somehow we managed to make it through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the early 2010s without needing politics to be involved in what bathroom you used. Our policy was pretty straightforward. You used the bathroom of the sex you looked like. No one stood outside the bathroom conducting Crocodile Dundee crotch checks to see which gender you were. Ironically, this entire controversy began when the city of Charlotte's liberal city council decided to protect transgender people's access to the bathroom of their choice. This access, of course, wasn't actually being threatened, but the Charlotte politicians were trying to look as liberal as possible. So Charlotte passed a new law for their city, and then the state of North Carolina's legislature, which is more conservative, repudiated that regulation and created a new law canceling it out. Which means, sigh, this entire controversy was totally unnecessary. Republican and Democratic politicians just wanted to find something to fight about. The ultimate irony here, by the way, was that Charlotte, which was trying to be uber inclusive, ended up losing the NBA's All-Star game and the ACC title game in football, even though the city had done nothing wrong. This entire case, to be honest, is a perfect example of how the nation and the sports leagues have lost their minds. ESPN's decision on Schilling created an incentive for fans sitting in front of their computer screens or phones to wait for someone to say or write something they disagreed with, just to demand the company take action and punish that speech. If ESPN hadn't fired Kurt Schilling, I would have never shared what Jemele Hill said about the president. And I still don't believe either Schilling or Hill should have been fired. I just believe Disney should treat them the same. Newsflash, if you're trying to silence the political opinions of others or cause them to lose their jobs, you aren't a social justice warrior, you're a totalitarian foe of free speech. That should scare all of us, regardless of our political persuasions, especially when ESPN's decision on Schilling created the atmosphere for a one-sided lionization of Colin Kaepernick when he took a knee on the sideline. Chapter 6. Colin Kaepernick's protest made no sense. On Friday, August 26, 2016, before an otherwise unremarkable preseason NFL game between the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers, Colin Kaepernick, a quarterback entering his sixth season in the NFL, refused to stand for the national anthem. The decision, made just over 3 months before the 2016 presidential election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, would become a cultural flashpoint for the intersection of sports and politics. The single decision, more so than any other, that ended the role of sports as an escape from politics and turned sports into just another avenue for political rancor. The resulting media coverage of Kaepernick's protest, once and for all, demonstrated that the sports media and the sports television networks had an inherent liberal bias that saw virtually no network or media member willing or able to criticize Kaepernick without receiving substantial censure. There is much to unpack from Kaepernick, but most of it, not surprisingly, has little to do with Kaepernick himself, who, while becoming a cultural flashpoint, has said little of substantive, coherent, or intelligent political thought. Before we explain how Kaepernick became such a lightning rod, let's first return to what Kaepernick himself has said to explain the protest that he began in late August of 2016. After the game, Kaepernick said, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder." These post-game comments represented the totality of Kaepernick's explanation of his protest on that night. This is why, in his sixth season in the NFL, he suddenly decided not to stand for the national anthem. As if that weren't enough, Kaepernick made these post-game comments while wearing a Fidel Castro and Malcolm X t-shirt. Later in the season, before a game against the Miami Dolphins, Armando Salguero, a Dolphins beat writer born in Havana, Cuba, aggressively questioned Kaepernick on his Fidel Castro t-shirt. Kaepernick fell apart when he was asked to explain how he could wear a t-shirt with a picture of Fidel Castro while advocating for minority rights. Since, you know, the Castros have an awful record when it comes to oppressing their people, and Cubans have no First Amendment rights. No one in Cuba would be able to disrespect the country's anthem like Kaepernick had done. Pressed on the issue, Kaepernick was unable to make any sense at all, saying, "One thing Fidel Castro did do is they have the highest literacy rate." Note, this isn't true, because they invest more in their education system than they do in their prison system, which we do not do here, even though we're fully capable of doing that. We do break up families here. That's what mass incarceration is. That was the foundation of slavery. So our country has been based on that as well as the genocide of Native Americans. As you can see, Kaepernick, when finally confronted about his outfit and his political beliefs, was nonsensical. Back in August, however, he addressed his political beliefs more substantially. Spoiler alert, they were mostly nonsensical too. Here was Kaepernick attempting to explain why he wasn't standing for the national anthem. There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. The cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's not right by anyone's standards. He continued, "There is police brutality. People of color have been targeted by police, so that's a large part of it. And they're government officials. They're put in place by the government, so that's something that this country has to change. There's things we can do to hold them more accountable, make those standards higher. You have people that practice law and are lawyers and go to school for 8 years, but you can become a cop in 6 months and don't have to have the same amount of training as a cosmetologist." That's insane. Someone that's holding a curling iron has more education and more training than people that have a gun and are going out on the street to protect us. Asked what evidence of this he had, Kaepernick replied, "I've seen videos, I've seen circumstances where men and women that have been in the military have come back and been treated unjustly by the country they fought for and have been murdered by the country they fought for on our land. That's not right." This interaction with the media was also telling. Kaepernick wasn't familiar with the phrase blanket indictment or aware at all that his comments might be seen as indicting all of law enforcement. This is not surprising considering Kaepernick chose to also practice in socks depicting police officers as pigs. Question, are you concerned that this is seen as a blanket indictment of law enforcement? Kaepernick, what's that? It can be seen as a blanket indictment of law enforcement. Kaepernick, as far as what? I don't really understand what you're trying to get at. You say people are getting murdered by police. You seem to indict all of police. At least now, hopefully, Kaepernick is familiar with the term blanket indictment. Later in the conversation, Kaepernick was asked about his specific political opinions in an election year. Question, does the fact that this is an election year have anything to do with the timing? Kaepernick, once again, it wasn't a timing thing. It wasn't something that was planned, but I think the two presidential candidates that we currently have also represent the issue that we have in this country right now. Question, do you want to expound on that? Kaepernick, I mean, you have Hillary, who's called black teens or black kids super predators. You have Donald Trump, who's openly racist. I mean, we have a presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, who's deleted emails and done things illegally and is a presidential candidate. That doesn't make sense to me, because if that was any other person, you'd be in prison. So what is this country really standing for? Kaepernick, it would later emerge, also had never bothered to vote in his life. It is telling, however, that just about everyone reading this book is hearing for the first time that Colin Kaepernick said Hillary Clinton should be in prison. Isn't it amazing what quotes the left-wing sports media embrace? It seems like a pretty big deal that Kaepernick, amid his nonsensical rambling, said that Hillary Clinton should be in prison. That wasn't covered by the left-wing sports media because it didn't fit their narrative. Covering these quotes would have also necessitated that the media acknowledge what all of you reading right now are thinking. Kaepernick's political beliefs are essentially nonsensical. Yet other than these comments, Kaepernick has not spoken publicly for the past 2 years, preferring to spend his time on social media, sharing